Welcome back.
I never thought we would return because it was kind of a grueling first episode.
Did you think so?
It was just a lot of information.
You thought I had too much information?
Well, that's the point of this whole series, isn't it?
That's what I thought. Too much information. Right.
So it kind of, because we're doing it in these episodes, and we weren't doing it in big chunks like we did last time, I don't know what to expect with each length of each episode.
Right.
So there's a little, in the back of my mind, kind of scared where this is going
to
go.
Well, ideally, you know, we want to keep these episodes to an hour or less.
Really?
So you don't slash your wrists. And give enough information. But also, hey, we hit that last episode right at an hour.
That was fantastic, huh? I did notice that.
Yeah, and I still think we had a fairly entertaining episode, even though I felt that you probably could talk about Tyke the Elephant for an hour. That was probably your number one topic.
If there was a highlight of the episode one for all of you that tuned into that, this is episode two, by the way, in case you are wondering if this is not a fitness show. But Tyke the Elephant, I totally forgot.
Yeah.
And you, the day after we talked about Tyke, revealed to me that there was a movie.
Yes, there was actually a crowdfunded documentary where I guess it was like they got donors to actually donate money for them to produce this film.
I like to see those donors.
Yeah, and it's called Tyke the Outlaw Elephant. Wow. And you can actually buy the movie. There's a bootleg version available on YouTube.
Yeah.
With French subtitles. I sent that link to you.
Yes, you did.
And then if you really want to support Tyke and outlawed animals like Tyke and caged animals like Tyke, you can go to the Tyke the Outlaw Elephant website and you can buy that DVD.
Okay, you know how I always at the end of these shows give you guys a little thing to see if you actually listen to these shows? Well, I want anybody that's listening to episode two right now to go and actually look up the Tyke the Elephant movie and comment somewhere on the page that they did look it up and they watched it.
Yeah, it has a movie poster and everything.
Easter egg right there for episode two. All right.
So how's that for an intro?
Still talking about Tyke the Elephant.
I know. We're back.
Well, this is episode two, okay? This is 1994. What are we doing?
It's the Sleep Times Over 1994 year in review.
Yep.
I wanted to preface it that, you know, it is a year in hip-hop review, which we did with the 92 and the 93. The first episode, we just wanted to kind of lay the ground of what the pop cultural climate, what just the world was like in 94. And I think, like I said, for better or worse, we laid out a lot of info.
There was a lot of info, yes.
Yep.
There was, and I've gotten feedback already that everybody now knows what happened in 1994.
That's great.
Clearly what happened in 1994.
Great.
So
I can't forget it now.
I'm thinking about Tyke in 2020.
That's right, man.
So what do we have now in episode two? What is this now?
With episode one, I figured we need to start off with something for the general audience. We needed something with a broad appeal, and what better than the biggest crossover singles of 1994?
Okay.
Because we're gonna start off talking about Bush Babies and Dred Scott and
don't foreshadow
artists, right?
So
we're gonna go into the hits.
Let's play some
and
hits.
And pretty much you'll get a feel as you go along. We're gonna go down the rabbit hole of hip hop music in 1994, one of the biggest years in hip hop music. But we wanted to ease you guys in and play the hits.
Me in.
And play the hits first.
Let's ease everything in, yeah.
And as Aaron being a DJ for how long you've been a DJ now? 2 decades?
Yeah.
2 decades roughly. Being a DJ, he's heard these songs 69 trillion times.
That's correct.
I'm worried right now. Episode may get people excited, but for you, I feel this will be a triggering episode possibly because these are going to be the songs that you were probably... You weren't DJing in 94. You were still in high school.
No, I collected records, but I was not
DJing.
These
were definitely songs you tell me, I guarantee you played probably every single one of these songs at one point in your DJing career.
Can't wait to hear these. So, okay, let me give a disclaimer before you play these hits, okay?
Right.
Clearly, if you're listening to this, you're going to go one or two ways with it. You're going to be like, wow, reminiscing, because you may have not heard it in a while. But then there might be the other person that might be similar to myself. So take that with a grain of salt and just know the different feelings that people get. I don't know where I'm going with this, but I'm going to be annoyed. I know I'm going to be annoyed.
Do you know what I'm actually excited for?
Really?
Is the handful if there's any millennials that will listen to this episode and go like, oh yeah, I remember that song, or my dad used to play that song.
Probably.
Or,
right.
Oh my God, that was from then. Or I didn't, I have all these little tidbits about the music that maybe might be interesting. And the reason why I added all the little extra info is for the old futs like yourself and myself that don't know all the backstory on some of these songs. I mean, hopefully maybe that will make it a little bit more interesting.
Let's break it down. If somebody was born in 1994, how old are they right now?
If someone's born
94 to 2004 is 10.
Yeah.
2004 to 2014 is 20. That's how we do old school counting.
And public then school, man.
26 is 26 years old, so they can rent a car. Because 25 is renting a car. So 26 years old, 26? If the person was born in 94, hope that's correct. So there you have it. Somebody that's 26 was born.
Isn't it 36?
36?
No, wait. You're right.
Come on, Milarani. Wait, 24? Wait,
96. No, you got it. All right.
Okay, we got to play a hit. Let's play a hit. We've gone on too long and without a hit.
We're going to
play some hits.
Yeah, public school all the way. We're going to start off with the biggest song. Should we go backwards or we never talk about this. Should we go backwards, like count it down and have the minor hits first and then end with the biggest?
Okay, we should just go with the minors to the heavy hitters because then it'll get people marketing to tune in and listen to this whole shebang.
I'm excited.
Right? Old people and 26-year-olds. That's a great idea. Yeah.
And what better than to start off with your favorite, everyone's favorite, the most debated rapper. I think one of the most debated rappers in the game. It's Nas.
We're considering this like a mega hit.
This is his biggest hit off of Illmatic.
Did this chart?
This actually charted on the rap charts. Well, and the R&B charts.
We're talking about the pop charts.
It was the closest one to get close to the pop charts.
It didn't make the top 100.
It made actually top 100, but didn't crack the 50.
All right,
50.
There you go. How about it, 26-year-olds?
So, what's your thought of this one? As far as Illmatic goes, being held as a classic album.
Okay, in to be fair, it's a classic album. I enjoyed it in 1994. 26 years later, I can still appreciate it. It's fine. I'm not mad at it. I'm not annoyed with it. I'm surprised it made the hits show.
Well, like I said, we're seeing minor hits, but this was the biggest crossover hit from the Nas album. It was the fourth single he released.
Right.
They did. It was Halftime, It Ain't Hard to Tell.
One Love, right?
One Love, and this. World's Yours. And this was the biggest.
All right.
So Pete Rock beat.
Yes.
Right? Nas actually in the studio convinced Pete Rock to sing the hook.
Correct.
Right?
Which is him right there.
Because they were actually going to get a singer to do it, or they actually wanted Nas to sing it. And Nas actually convinced Pete Rock to do it because he just loved the tone of his voice.
I pulled it off. It worked.
All right.
Okay, what we got?
Another minor hit, but big for what it was. Scarface, I Seen a Man Die.
Okay, this video was shown a lot.
The video was shown almost daily on YoMTV Raps.
It was a lot.
In heavy rotation.
And then even on the box.
That's
for the
right.
people. We've talked about the box before.
And I think this song, again, solidifies Scarface as one of the best storytellers in hip-hop.
Right.
We can put him with the, you know, with the Slick Ricks and, the guys that really paint those pictures.
He had the appeal to get both, because back then it was you're an East Coast guy or you're a West Coast guy. Both sides liked him. He got respect on both ends. And Hawaii obviously liked him. And they liked that slow style of, and he's from Texas. So.
And this was one of only two Scarface singles to ever crack the Billboard top pop charts.
Oh.
Can you name the other one?
Okay, Never Seen a Man Cry.
I Seen a Man Die.
This is
from the Diary album.
And then there's another one.
Featuring everyone's favorite, yours and mine. It has another rapper on it that is the most beloved rapper, deceased rapper ever.
With Scarface? Wow.
All right, it's Smile featuring Tupac, which was released in 1997.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
I remember this. Okay.
So, what's your thoughts on this one? I still really like this song. I still really enjoy it.
For the time, it's good. If you're a Scarface fan, you're obviously gonna like it. It's on. First thing that's gonna come to mind is it's slow.
Right.
So, can you deal with it? It's not
almost
like
no
Nas.
Hook, really, right? It just has that one line. I never seen a man cry until I seen a man die. Right.
He's a storyteller guy, so you're gonna have to look. You need a visual maybe to get into it. That's why the video was shown a lot, because the visual matched his words.
I mean, this was the natural follow up to My Mind's Playing Tricks on You, as far as that storytelling goes.
Right.
That
in a slower
Scarface
pace.
Scarface was known for.
Right.
Know?
It's fine. Yeah. I don't see anybody not liking Scarface.
Yeah. Produced Everybody's by Anno Joe and Mike Dean. Mike Dean would actually leave Rap-A-Lot camp to actually go on and be one of Kanye's co-producers and help produce
that is correct,
Kanye's stuff.
Yes.
But the song, in a nutshell, is a song about a guy who's released from prison. He's trying to go straight, but pulled back into life crime.
Right.
And he dies in a hospital with regrets. Oh, Lord.
That sucks, huh? Shit.
Jeez.
How's that for 2020?
Real uplifting. Well, let's go to something a little bit more fun that was another hit.
Yeah.
And this is a big song in Hawaii. Born to Roll.
Okay.
Master Ace Incorporated.
Very, what word could I use for this? It's a very sign of the times, but polarizing at the same time, because it was lowrider culture.
That's right.
All the lowrider magazine, I don't want to stereotype and say the Mexicans, but I said it. And if you got what he was doing, you were into him before Born to Roll. Because, you know, the whole
this was actually just a remix.
Exactly.
And renamed single for
exactly.
Cheap Ass N, which was released in 1993.
Correct, right.
From the Slaughterhouse album.
And Master Ace is a brilliant guy. So he changed the beat, made it trendy at the time, did the video with the lowriders in it. And it's them walking around in this lowrider convention. It sets it all up, and it's a classic bass sound that's going to be in a lowrider. Is a genius song, and it clearly worked.
Yeah, he was one of the few East Coast producers who got it, who got that I needed bi-coastal appeal.
Yes,
and saw what was going on in the West Coast, because guys, you remember we're in the heart of Death Row in '94, and the West Coast sound has dominated.
Yeah,
it dominated. It just the music business. I mean, it changed production, the way hip hop producers were making beats.
Hip hop wasn't making a lot of money like they are now. Hip hop was, you go gold, that's fantastic.
Yep.
You know, you go platinum, oh my God. And all the platinum people were the West Coast people. And all the New York rappers weren't making nothing because there was bootlegging going on. So they weren't making shit. And then that's where Master Ace had to do something.
This was arguably his biggest like pop crossover song.
Clearly.
This and Sitting on Chrome.
That was decent,
but this was the biggest by far.
And then that led to that album that he made, which was in 94? Was that 95?
We're talking about the Sitting on Chrome album.
Yeah.
I believe that album came out the following year. INC with the INC
Ride. INC Ride and all that, right.
Okay, the Sitting on Chrome album.
Get ready for
that. I believe it was 95. But
95 show, everyone.
So that was a
conceptual.
Replayability now, you still enjoy
this song is still hot because of the fact that it's got that bounce, it's got the bass, it's got the West Coast vibe to it. It's a timeless song.
Yeah.
This is the first song of the ones that you played thus far that is a timeless song that is decent, that if it was playing in the car, I would let it roll.
And you can play this in a DJ set and people still vibe to it.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Because it's Hawaii. And plus, the Kanakas, they love these kind of beats.
Now let's go to something
they love the lowriders.
Maybe some people won't all agree upon.
Okay.
The MC Hammer, he took that MC off for this one, right?
Once again, the climate changed. You cannot do what MC Hammer was doing in 91, 92, in 94. He had to pivot.
Much like all of us. Suge Knight was consulting him at this point.
Exactly. And then he dissed all the East Coast people. He made disses to Black Sheep and Tribe Called Quest. It was very kind of random, but there was bad blood there.
Right.
But he became this gangster guy. And I can't fault him for that.
Yeah.
We can't, because he can't come out as 92 Hammer now. It would be laughed at.
Do you remember the name of this album?
Not Funky Headhunter.
The Funky Headhunter.
Funky Headhunter? Okay.
And what a shift,
It was.
And this video was out of control.
This video is out of control.
With the waterfall, and you're wearing that banana hammock.
Well, there were two versions of this video.
Right.
Right? So him
there
with
was the parking lot one, right?
And then the parking lot one. So, of course, the parking lot one is the regular, and then you got It's All Good. Can't forget It's All Good. I can't fault him for what he had to try. He had to.
I have to admit, I ordered this video on the box.
The one by the pool.
I did order it.
Well, at the time too, right? To see thongs and shit, that was new.
For our millennials out there, the box was a phone service where you actually called in music videos and you paid $1 via credit card over the phone to watch a music video.
And the video would play. And then you'd see the number come up.
And you'd actually see a queue, almost like pulling your number at Lalia Bakery.
Yeah. Yeah, it was amazing at the time. It was amazing to call and see this on the screen.
Yeah.
Right, and you'd have to wait for it to show up. But I can't be mad at him. Like, you would take the...
But this is not a song you're going to listen to now.
No, but I can't fault him, and I'm not mad at him. Like, if you were to take, like, the typical hip-hop guy who's, like, a bitter old man, who's going to be like, oh, wow, this sucks, man. This ain't real hip-hop. Like, fuck you, dude. It's just, it's a business decision. He had to do it. It's a business move. We can't have 91 Hammer showing up in 94.
That's right.
So he knew that, and Hammer ain't stupid, even though he gave his money to everybody. Right. He knew that, and then he did it, so it's fine.
Went with the G-Funk sound.
It's fine.
All right, staying on the G-Funk sound, which is dominating in 94, this song was a big hit. Sam Snead, you better recognize...
Okay.
Now, let me just lay the groundwork for some people who don't know who Sam Snead is, because this was his only song that people know, right? Do you remember who he was originally associated with before Death Row?
Well, he was East Coast, right?
He was a part of the...
It wasn't Cash Money Click, right? No. Sam Snead, was he Philly?
No, he was originally a member of the Hit Squad.
Okay.
And he was K-Solo's producer. He actually produced a lot of K Solo songs, Erickson. And most notably, I Can't Hold It Back.
Oh, wow. Right.
And then he was recruited by Dr. Dre to become part of Dre's production team.
Got it.
And produce Natural Born Killers with him.
Right.
And then Keep Their Heads Ringing.
Right, that's right. And
then this was was supposed to be his breakout.
But
song.
It was a hit.
It was a
radio
hit.
And I don't know if we talked about this before, but Dr. Dre and all those guys, they knew how to get the songs played on the radio longer on their mix shows. Mm-hmm. They did the classic, you play the chorus only 8-bar rather than 16-bar. Meaning, they'll say the chorus, like, you better recognize, right? He'll say it only one time around, where usually the chorus, they say it two times around, so then you can mix out of it. Because everything is, intro is a 16, if people are following.
Yeah, it was really clever. So I heard you and Cavett talking about it when you're DJing. Because the song, everyone got the hook right away. It caught you.
And then it keeps it rolling because he raps right after the first loop of the chorus. So then you have to listen to it longer. Mm-hmm. So he's getting you to play the song longer in your mix show because all the intros to the other songs are 16 bar.
That's right.
So it's a clever, ingenious move to get him on the air, which it worked. It's a good song, but you got him on it. Afro Puffs is the same thing.
Yep.
A lot of the Death Row songs, you look, they're one chorus and then go back into the rapping, which is not the case for a lot of songs. So.
Well, a lot of people don't know what happened to him after that, but actually after, you know, his album was supposed to be dropping in 96, he was diagnosed with a brain tumor.
Wow.
He's still around. He's still alive, guys. Don't worry.
Oh,
but it put his career on hold because he had to go through chemo and all the treatment. And then he actually went on to have his own production career. He worked with Jay-Z, G-Unit, Scarface. He's not like a prolific famous producer, but people still gave him work.
He's still making some cash.
Yeah, and he put out a mixtape series called Street Scholars, which you can actually find online, which is not bad. So that's Sam Snead. How about this one? Would you still play this at a party?
Oh, no.
You don't know?
I haven't heard it yet. I'm just saying
No. This song.
Oh, you're talking about
this song. This song.
I'm already foreshadowing. It's
all
about foreshadowing.
Would you play that song in a party?
Depends.
Only
who's
old
there.
People. Only that.
It would be an
people.
Old party. It would be like you're picking a lady dinner.
Oh, okay.
Some shit like that.
Yeah. Middle of high school, Kalani reunion.
That's,
you know.
Oh, God. I will not be there.
Okay. Well, sticking with G-Funk, it was a song that you actually just mentioned, and it was so funny that it was right here. It's Afro Puffs.
And there's another one.
Layer H from the Above the Rim soundtrack.
It was a major
biggest
hip
hop soundtrack of 94.
Right.
By far.
Right. Well, she had the buzz from The Chronic, so everybody knew of her. They knew about this female rapper and perfect timing.
All right, here's a pop quiz. Lady of Rage, aka Robin Allen. All right. Do you know where she's originally from?
Originally from? Isn't, I'm gonna say Philly again?
Oh,
I'm gonna keep saying
Philly's on the brain. She's from Virginia.
Ah.
And she was always called Lady of Rage. But okay. The funny thing about her was she was discovered by Dr. Dre when she was associated with the production team L.A. Posse. You remember L.A. Posse?
L.A. Posse, yes.
They were LL Cool J's producers. They produced the entire Bigger and Deffer album in 87.
That is correct.
And her first appearance ever, guys, if you guys are rap nerds, serious rap nerds, her first appearance on Wax, you know, do you know about this? It was on a Posse cut from a rapper, a really popular rapper back in like 91, 92.
91, 92, East Coast? West Coast guy. East Coast guy.
East Coast guy.
East Coast guy.
Big, big man.
Chub Rock.
Chub Rock. You got it. So she was, her first appearance was on the Posse cut Bring 'Em Home Safely with Third Bass.
God, that sounds awful.
Off the One album, yeah.
I don't remember that song.
Bring 'Em Home Safely.
I, at this point, you know, we're lost in a storm. Might as well bring 'em home safely.
I actually I think in the, you know, the history of like female MCs, I really like Lady of Rage because she was actually
She's fine.
One of female MCs, like her MC like that actually rapper. Guys could like and you wouldn't be ridiculed.
Well, because in the female rappers back in 94, it was either very feminist or very female oriented, Queen Latifah and whatnot, or they have the low voice. Well, they all had the low voice.
Right.
But it was the appeal was really tough to get into because they would talk about like these female issues. It's a male dominated thing.
Right.
They didn't go into sex yet.
Right.
Little Kim was the first one to do that shit. So this was the first one that you
could
be cool. It's
a pretty insulated culture. I mean, it wasn't very accepting of stuff, you know. And if you're going to be corny, you might as well just go all out corny. But a lot of people were going to put people on blast for, so-called faking the funk or not being real, keeping it real.
That's clearly evolved to not be. And it's all sex now.
Yeah.
Back then, you'd be ridiculed for any type of sex or showing anything, right? No one did a sex song back then, like that revealed themselves.
Well, that's
themselves.
Why like Lil Kim and Foxy Brown kind of paved the way.
Exactly,
for those,
that
those
changed
artists.
Everything.
And and can't forget Trina out of Miami.
Right, that changed everything.
But yeah, it will take 3 years after this song for Lady Rage's album Necessary Roughness to be released.
That is
three years.
That's
and then by that point everyone was they were moved on.
They moved
on
their life, right? Smoking.
Oh man,
there's a lot of weed. A lot of delay.
So moving on to another big West Coast hit, 1994. Our first crossover artist from the Bay Area, San Francisco.
Oh,
Anthony Forte.
There you go,
AKA Rappin' Forte.
He's been around. He was around for a little bit before this hit.
He had an album before this. He was associated with Too Short.
Right, he's not
he
a rookie here.
Too Short's one of his albums. Right, I think he was on that Don't Fight the Feeling, right? He was on
Right. So he had his Bay Area following already, and he had this hit. He hit the hit. It's smooth. It was a smooth song.
They sampled the Private Number. That song Private Number from the late 60s.
Yes.
And it was such a smart, because he just took that beginning. If you listen to Private Number, they just sampled that first 10 seconds of the song.
Exactly.
Loop it, and it's
perfect.
Perfect.
And it was perfect timing for it to come out. It matched the time. It wasn't Compton, but Bay was another thing that was a growing evolution, and it perfectly hit. So
he wasn't like the first artist that that people heard from the Bay. That was probably N2 Deep was probably one of the biggest crossovers in E40.
Well, we know N2 Deep is just like a bunch of white guys.
But I would say that, you know, and then the guys on the underground were like RBL Posse, Don't Give Me That Bammer.
Right, that's a whole other. You have a ton of groups. The Click, you know,
right.
But it hit because he knew how to, because that smooth production.
Great voice. He has a great voice.
It sounds like a gangster song.
Yep.
Like all other gangster songs.
This was, tell me what you think of this take. I thought this was kind of 1994's answer to like Ice-T's High Rollers.
Yeah.
Yeah. That smooth beat, easy listening.
I agree with
this
that.
This is a rap song that my grandma could listen to. I mean, no.
Can we have footage of that? Film that. Grandma. That'll be the promo for this episode.
All right. Wow. Staying on the Playa's theme. We also had the debut single from, again, one of the most beloved groups of our time, Outkast. From
the Christmas LaFace song.
Christmas album. LaFace this Christmas. Is the LaFace Christmas version.
Wasn't this 93? This was 94?
It was Christmas in 93, but the song didn't chart until 94.
Got it.
Because I don't think this was initially released as a single. I think they released the TLC song from the first Late Bells.
This was released later, right?
Right.
Because then in the chorus it says all the players are coming on Christmas Day,
right.
But then they changed it, obviously.
And this would be the biggest hit of their debut album, Southern Playlist, the Cadillac Music.
Yeah.
this opened up a lot of eyes.
Incredible song.
Yeah, incredible and song led to a great album. But this sums up them perfectly. Right.
Incredible video's back and great. Forth wordplay and bars between Dre and Big Boy.
And we didn't know about Atlanta. We didn't know, because these guys are from Atlanta, we didn't know much about Atlanta back then.
That's right.
And then their rapping style was not like gangster kind of.
And this is like, this was a guy that could appeal. Their flow was like, I mean, it was lyrical flow. So right. The East Coast guys were like getting into it.
It was soulful. It wasn't the gangster flow. It appealed to many, and it obviously took them far. Yeah.
And shout out to Organized Noize for this incredible production.
Oh, yeah, very underrated.
Super underrated. They were the, like, you know, I hate to say the bomb squad of the South, but they were kind of in the same, breaking the mold. In the like breaking the sound and expanding the sound.
Even both of these guys are two unique guys. Organized Noize is unique. They were very ahead of the game and outside the box.
Yeah,
and
man.
it showed.
Tico and so. Sleepy, yeah.
Yeah.
So another cool thing about this song was, Outkast was already signed to LaFace, and then L.A. Reid came to them and were like, "We need a Christmas song." And they came up with this song on the fly. This was not a song they had in the pocket.
Right.
So if you listen to this song, guys, and you play the song, you can hear the kind of jingle bells
right.
bassing in Correct. The back. It's kind of like the spine of the song, right? Right. And then the original chorus, they're singing "All the Players Get Together on Christmas Day.
Day. Yeah. Right. It was very odd, because I heard that version obviously first.
Right.
And I was just like, all right, I mean, I get it, it's a Christmas album, but it was just, you just don't really hear much of Christmas.
That's right.
Because everybody's all pissed off. So they changed it. All right. It was fine.
Staying on the, so all of these songs didn't go gold, but they all charted and were all crossover hits.
Okay.
All right. Next one we got, another huge album in 1994, Lethal Injection from Ice Cube. This was the second biggest single off. We'll talk about the first biggest single in a little bit, but this is You How We Do It. You okay, know how we yes. do it from producer QD3.
And if you're noticing a trend of the songs that you're playing in a row, if you look at Players Ball, this song, it's all that is the vibe of 1994.
People want to drive around in their cars, listen to music.
That's it. Born to Roll. That's the style. That's what was really hitting.
Yep.
Majorly hitting.
Yep. 1994, and cruising Waikiki, cruising Alamana Beach Park.
Right, every radio station played this.
Rolling your windows time. Down, blasting right. your JBL speakers or whatever
those speakers. Tweeters, subwoofers. But this was it? This was it?
That's right.
Everybody, well, every station obviously played it. The video was really smooth too. It was really good video.
Yeah.
Totally different style from Ice Cube before, because Ice Cube's always mad and rapping fast. But Or fast and angry. This one, he's smooth.
This was obviously an answer to "It Was a Good Day."
Clearly,
people
right.
love that. I
right.
actually like this song more than "It Was a Good
oh,
Day."
Oh, clearly, yes. And I'll take this over "It Was a Good Day."
Talk about producers who just we thought were going to be bigger. QD3. I really
Quincy Jones's
had
son.
An eye on him. Quincy Jones's son, yeah. Rashida Jones's brother.
Yeah.
Right. We really thought this guy was going to go places.
Well,
and his career kind of just stalled after the G-Funk era.
Did you think he was going to go? Because he was kind of a ripoff of Dre. His style was a ripoff of Dre. We got it was nice, but where would he go from here?
I think you know, he did start his own record label.
Okay, right.
He had two artists that didn't go anywhere. It was Raj and Mr. X. I don't know if you ever heard of those
Sounds
guys.
Like a tag team or something. US tag champs.
Raj and Mr. X. Yeah,
wow.
Yeah.
World class championship wrestling. It sounds good, but it was part of the 94 scene. Like if we took QD3 at 94 and be like, okay, we sent him over to 97. Would he survive?
I just thought his 99? Songs were like really impeccably mixed. Really mixed
it's
and
clean.
Mastered incredibly.
And that was the trend.
And they were so clean and right. the sound was so pure. And it actually had musicality to it. He's using samples, right. scratching, and live instrumentation all together.
The scratching, you still heard, but not in a hit.
Right.
So, but it was, that's the thing you bring up, though, that's a good point of the 93 to 94, is it got, the sound got cleaner.
Yeah.
We went from the SP-1200, which is like a rough sounding
right.
machine.
It's what we know for like Gangstar.
Oh, that East Coast stuff. And then they cleaned it up. And now you have a very smooth, I hate using that word, but it's clean. The production's clean.
Yeah.
Like Warren G, we're gonna hear Warren G. That was he was the epitome of clean sounding stuff.
Yeah, Warren G did have his own distinctive
right.
sound.
Right, but
you
it's
know?
All cleaned up, remastered, however you wanna call it. This is, and this, it just sounds good playing in a sound system.
Yeah.
Not rough.
Yeah. And speaking of not rough, Heavy D and the Boys.
Oh, I forgot.
This
about
got me
this.
Waiting yeah. from the Nothing But Love album. This was his biggest hit off of this album.
Yeah.
And one of his, you know, it wasn't as a big crossover album as Peaceful Journey. No. This was Heavy D trying to get back to making a little bit more hip hop, well, get away from the New Jack Swing.
Getting harder, but he just can't let go of his dancing. He just wanted to keep dancing.
Hey, you can't blame the guy for dancing.
Well, because you gotta look at now, whenever you mention Heavy D, what is the first song people think of that are old? Now That We Found Love.
Now That We Found Love.
Super fast song, it's a dance song, he's got the pants running around.
Yep.
He had to pivot like Hammer. He had to pivot. He can't be doing Now That We Got Found Love in 94.
No.
You can't do any song over 120 BPM in 94. It's all slow gangster
and
shit.
And he got rid of the boys after this.
He got rid of the boys after
oh,
this, right?
Where are the boys?
Well, you know, they didn't turn to men. How about that? But it's him pivoting, and you can't fault him for it. I mean, it's slower. He's got the Jamaican girl.
Right.
He's like focusing in on his rapping now. I'm not mad at him.
This was actually the album where were you kind of done with Heavy D? I was still a fan.
It was fun to see him back in the mix.
Right.
You know, it's always good to see a guy that you haven't heard from in a couple years come back. It was always fun, but. You knew the writing was on the wall.
Well, this was the album that you saw he made the effort. I mean, he's got DJ Eddie F, he's got Marley Marl right, here, Eric
stupid.
Sermon,
yeah, he's a music producer. He knows, he's not stupid. He's an executive. But it's just, he tried. It didn't go as big as it could have. Because all of his songs became this BPM after this. There's going to be many more, I'm sure we're going to talk about.
Yeah, much more. He turned into the smooth rapper.
And
yeah.
It's fine. But the writing was on the wall. Even though he had albums to go in years, you know, he had like album, late 90s had an album, right? He had albums all the way to 2000s, yeah. Every day, right?
This was a number one Billboard rap single, number three R&B charts, and it actually cracked Billboard top 20 pop.
Really?
Yep.
This?
Big song. This almost went gold.
Really?
It almost went gold.
That is a swerve. I would never have thought this and gold would be in the same zone.
Well, we'll see. Exactly. We'll see what you think of these songs, because next songs
exactly,
we're gonna be doing.
Zara pissed off at Heavy D right now.
The next songs we're gonna be doing are songs that actually went gold.
Okay.
And this is a guy that we're gonna be talking about a lot in '94, Warren G.
Well, right, and then here you go. Here's the clean sound. So, if you just let this, just listen to this, right? You don't hear this.
What do you think of this song?
I would never want to hear it, but I'm just stating it's a clean. Sounding
but
production.
Just, I think what I liked about Warren G too is, again, just like QD3, live instrumentation, samples, scratching. He actually has scratching on the song.
Because he is DJ Warren G.
Right.
It has all the elements of what hip hop is, cleaned up. It is one of hip hop had a cleaned up sound.
Right.
I guess to put it simply, this is it. You still got the drum, you still got the bass, you still got the sample, you still got the snare coming
right.
in. It's all the elements, scratching. It's just cleaner.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like if we go back to 93 and we look at like all those 93 New York groups, like The King and I.
That's right.
Lords of the Underground.
That's right.
They would probably have the same beat, but it would be a lot rougher. The treble would be higher, louder.
Right.
And it just would sound like some kind of like 93, like those Jeep remixes from DJ Premier.
That's right.
King and I, which is not good. But that was the sound.
Yeah, they wanted it more raw. You know, this was the opposite of RZA, which was kind of dirty sounding. And
right.
almost, you know, had that
RZA mastered the
sound,
dirty
right?
sound.
Which was literally made in the basement. Right.
Right. Like people that didn't master the dirty sound and all that was like Marley Marr and at the end of his career. Premiere in the beginning of his career sucked.
Right.
But that's the evolution. It's now cleaner.
This is another influential thing is funk in the West Coast. And George Clinton had a resurgence in the 90s. This is Bop Gun.
Oh, this is like the 30-minute
from
song.
From Ice Cube. Well, this is the radio edit.
So, thank God.
But this is the Ice Cube. This was the biggest hit of Lethal Injection.
Yeah.
This was by far the biggest hit.
It's a dance track. You can't
and if you guys remember, George Clinton actually released a single with rappers, released an album with rappers, paint the White House black in the 90s.
Revival.
I mean, he was back on the scene.
Because what did Dre
from the
do?
Chronic.
Sample
so
all.
Smart. Yep.
So Clinton's back.
Took every song, right?
Right. And Cube ain't stupid.
No.
I'm going to do a George Clinton song too. And there it is. And it's a hit. Go figure. Radio Free played the hell out of it.
Let's just remake One Nation Under a Groove, right?
Right.
Get George Clinton singing the hook, co-producing the song.
That. Pay him. That's it. You know, two tears in a bucket. Fuck it.
This was the fourth single,
from House
fourth Party. And last single the third single from his fourth album, Lethal Injection, but by far the biggest hit. Went gold.
Lethal Injection was a good album.
Charted big time, right, on Billboard pop charts as well.
That was a good album. He pivoted to Ice Cube.
Yes.
Because if you take a look at the first two Ice Cube, it's angry and rough, raw sounding.
Yep.
He had the Bomb Squad of all people on the first album. He clearly pivoted. And he saw what was going on.
But then you know what the return of Angry Ice Cube was later? We'll talk about in future episodes, West Side Connection. That was the return of Angry Ice Cube.
Well, yeah, but it still had the clean sound, though. A lot of, West Up and all that, you know.
Or still talking about West Coast, another big song, Ahmad Lewis, a.k.a. Just Ahmad.
Oh.
And the song that we've heard in movies and commercials.
To quote a movie, Major League.
And this is, I believe, our only one-hit... Oh, no, we have two one-hit wonders here. But this is back in the day from Ahmad. How sick of this song are you?
I can't listen to this more than 20 seconds. I can't.
Well, this was released in spring of 94.
There were a lot of back in the day songs.
Yeah, there was.
Back in the day.
Everybody want to reminisce?
Everybody wants to do a back in the day song. Like Dred Scott.
Yep.
Ahmad. Illegal. Back in the day.
When I first heard this single, I hated his voice. But I've gotten used to it over the years, and I enjoy this song for what it is now.
Ahmad was like a battle rapper in West Coast clubs, you know, Good Life and whatnot. He made his way through that style, but then for it to come out like this was clearly a marketing plan.
Right.
It kind of worked.
I mean, you know who followed the Ahmad tempo is Ski-Lo.
Right, that's all the same guys. Right? Yeah. Good Life Cafe. But I cannot. I never liked it then. I don't like it now.
I really like the Teddy Pendergrass sample. I like the beat.
But I'm just not listening to this as I'm catching the bus.
Yeah, but he never released another. He wouldn't release another solo album until, you know, the 2000s. You know, maybe 2010, I believe. But he started a live band called Fourth Avenue Jones in '97.
Correct. Yes,
a career with Fourth Avenue Jones.
There were some good things on there. Yeah.
Yeah. They never really had hits, but the people in the hip hop scene,
the underground
knew about
hits,
them. Yeah, they knew about them.
All right, it's over 20 seconds. Get out of this.
All right. Your favorite, everyone's favorite, Jawai's favorite, Bone Thugs and Harmony.
Well,
now,
what can you
how
say?
Much was this bumping out of cars in Hawaii
all
in '94 into '95?
All day. And I get it.
And how many techno remixes did we have to hear?
There was a lot. They made this because it was such a slow song that people didn't know what to do with it, so they made the techno version, the dance version. The beat, once again, West Coast beat. It's clean, Dre sounding. This is Eazy-E managing him, so he ain't stupid too. He saw what Dre's doing. Let's make a Dre beat. The Bone guys, the history is there with what were they doing before this song?
They were Bone Enterprise.
Right, they weren't rapping like this.
Independent Cleveland group.
Many rumors,
they were trying to do like a tongue twister style.
Right. Many said they copied Freestyle Fellowship.
That's right. That's still being talked about.
So they got him. He put him out there, and it hit because of the gangsterish, the Dre sounding beat. They sounded like nobody else.
Right. I give it up to these guys. They put Cleveland on the map as far as.
And they're not even from the West Coast.
Right.
Right.
They put Cleveland on the map. This is our first like Midwest artist, right. I guess, you know. And,
but it hit.
You know, besides, I guess, Virginia, right? That's the Lady of Rage. But everyone associated her as a West Coast artist.
Right. But this is like you think like these guys sound like a bunch of brothers. They sound like a bunch of Kanakas rapping right now. It has a very local vibe to this.
Oh, for sure.
You know, and that's why it hit even more so here.
It was really, really smart. It was the smartest move of Eazy-E post NWA was signing this group.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
They flew Hands from down. Cleveland to LA. They seat Eazy-E out.
Hands down.
They sang rap.
Yeah.
And then he gave him the record deal on the spot, but then he gave him the name. He changed their name.
Right.
Bone Enterprises kind of stinks.
It was bad. And remember when they would put that album out and be like, hey, this is Bone too. This was Bone before.
Right.
And people bought it thinking
it
like,
it was terrible. Right.
So they suckered a lot of suckers.
Bone Enterprise sounds like a sex toy.
It's like a sex toy place. It's like a Susie's.
Like a Susie's.
Action video. You guys remember that back in the day?
And shout out to producer DJ Unique, who went on with a pretty solid career with Bone, producing a lot of early
stuff.
They
all had stuff.
Yeah.
And then it led to a big legacy for them that,
All right.
Major hit.
Number 9. So that was number 10 in the biggest singles. Okay. Number 9, Ghetto Jam from Domino. What's your thoughts on this one?
Okay. The build-up for this guy was interesting because the ads for him was like, okay, here's Compton's next big hit, big thing, and they made him out to be this bigger-than-life guy. I don't know if you remember the ads for this, like the magazine ads.
Well, I'll preface it this. He was one of the first West Coast artists signed to Def Jam.
Then
so that was a big deal back then.
Right, so that was why Def Jam.
It was an offset. It was like an offshoot label of Def
Jam. Jam West.
Yeah, it was like what would eventually become Def Jam West. Right.
And once again, it ain't stupid. It's clean. It sounds Warren G-ish.
Yeah.
He's got this singing thing going on. It matches. It works.
It was super smart. And
it works.
And they rushed this. They released it in November of 93, but it really blew up in 94. Because it took some time for the video to circulate and stuff. And this was produced by DJ Battlecat.
DJ Battlecat.
Have a great career. But this song, you couldn't go anywhere in Hawaii without this being played.
It's classic, played on all the radio stations.
And this would go gold. Eventually, Domino, rest, like his career didn't really go anywhere.
I still like Sweet Potato Pie, though.
Yeah, Sweet Potato Pie. And Long Beach Thang, that was his other single.
Well, Long Beach Thang was really, that was the beginning of the end. That was like, okay, you gotta stop.
Well, but it was all on the same album.
Well, right, but then when the chorus, Sweet Potato Pie was fine. I'm all messed up and I don't know why.
Right.
That's like a lot of us right now. So
exactly.
Domino's fine.
All right. Now, number 8 in the biggest singles, Juicy.
Oh, okay.
Song that will never die. This song will live on forever. It'll be played forever. Yeah.
See, you can't really criticize
this
song. I
love this song.
Right?
I still like it.
Everybody loves this song. When it first came out, it was fine because you knew there was a darker side to this guy. Because,
oh, for sure.
Because if you follow who this was
in
magazines.
Yeah, he was in a party and bullshit. He
right.
To the
he's, like, he's a gangster. Like supposed to be like a really rugged guy. And he's supposed to be the next big thing.
Right.
And then he comes out with this song, which has like an R&B hook and is smooth. But then you can tell like, oh, this guy could probably kill some people. So it was a kind of an interesting intro. It was a very genius marketing intro to make this the top song. This is Puff Daddy.
This is the genius of Sean Puff
exactly.
Daddy Combs.
Because that's the genius there. Because it's not gangster, but you can tell he's got some issues.
Right.
It's smooth. It's got the catchy hook.
Matume. This Matume beat.
People
how many
know this.
People would use this after this? I mean.
Exactly. So this is the East Coast now using marketing genius. We've been talking about the West Coast marketing genius. Now this is the first East Coast marketing genius. And it's led to a lot of stuff. So can't fault it.
Now the story, the controversy with this song is this was originally produced by Pete Rock. Pete Rock programmed the drums. He kind of laid the original version down.
Right.
Then Puff Daddy and Trackmasters took it, kind of redid it, and then they took Pete Rock's name off the publishing.
That's right.
That was the biggest highway robbery for Pete Rock, in my opinion.
There is a Pete Rock remix, though. Of this.
There is, but is it really the one that people are checking for?
Well, not really, but I digress.
So this was obviously a song, guys, that everyone just went crazy for. And huge song, Juicy from Notorious B.I.G. from his debut album, Ready to Die. We're going to move on to song number 7, the most talked about artist in 1994, Snoop Doggy Dogg, Gin and Juice. The biggest single off Doggy Style.
There's nothing you can say here. I mean, it's clearly a legendary song. Me personally, if we're going with me personally, I would not listen to this anymore.
Okay.
I just can't.
Of the singles off Doggy Style, which is the most tolerable to you? It was this, Who Am I, What's My Name, right? There was Doggy Dog World.
Yeah.
And Murder Was the Case. Not none. You choose none?
None of them. I'll listen to the Shiznit. G's and Hustlers. G's and Hustlers.
The most problematic song. Ain't No Fun If the Homies Can't Have None.
It's been played so many times. I just don't want to deal with it. It just sounds tiring just to name these songs.
Yeah.
I get it. I know all of you out there listening. You guys love it. All you guys love it. I get it. I just cannot listen to it in the car. I've heard it so many times. And then Who Am I is the worst Snoop Dogg song of all time.
Oh, well, yeah, What's
that
My
song
Name?
Is
garbage. What's My Name,
That was a very bizarre way to intro him in for the new album, but it didn't matter. So, there you go.
But, all right, before we get into our top five, I got just one song
We're almost done? Oh. Now I'm perking up here.
We had one song that almost cracked you know, I didn't know, really know if we could put it in there, but it's like hip hop adjacent. It's Ani Kamozi. And this song was huge, but I don't know if you can necessarily call it a hip hop song. It's like reggae hip hop adjacent. But I just wanted to mention it because it was huge, and it was produced by a beloved hip hop producer. Do you remember who produced this song? Putting you on the spot.
Marley Marl. No.
Salaam Remy.
Oh boy. He's one of the most polarizing guys of all
Salaam
time.
Remy?
Because he was really good with the Fugees, but then he makes some really bad stuff. So he has a historic career of being a polarizing guy.
Yeah, I can see that.
You know?
And shout out Salaam Remy coming back with Black Thought and making some incredible
And
music.
Then you have that, right? So exactly, and that's genius.
Yeah.
Because there was a time when Salaam Remy was like, pfft. And then he had this, and then he had the Fugees remixes and all that.
So this was number one Billboard pop song in 94, and it went multi-platinum.
And then it was from that movie, right? Ready to Wear, right?
Yeah, Prêt-à-Porter.
Prêt-à-Porter, whatever, with all these celebrities running around modeling. I don't know what the hell the movie was even about.
Yeah.
But the first video was showing scenes of Ready to Wear with who was in there? Like all the people from Dallas or something.
Yeah, I just remember Naomi Campbell was in there. I kind of forgot the rest.
Right. All kind of suckers were in there. And then they switched it to make it a more street video.
I just wanted to mention it because it was hip hop adjacent and such a huge hit.
Well,
in 94.
Made in Hawaii because, of course, it sounds like reggae.
Right. And Ani Kamozi was around. Like, this was a guy that was actually a dancehall artist from like the early 80s. And then, he gets his biggest hit, you know, from this.
Correct.
Yeah.
So all get it. It's fine.
Now, back to the dance floor. The 69 Boys out of Miami.
94. Yep. This was 94.
Now, you couldn't go to the club without hearing this in 94. This was a summer smash, arguably, one of the biggest summer songs
undoubtedly,
in 94.
Undoubtedly, and it's sign of the times. It's party music.
Yep.
Booty music was a thing, was another genre. Two Live Crew.
But these guys changed it because they made more commercial-friendly bass music than Two Live was.
Exactly, right. They just took the formula and then they made it commercial-friendly.
Right.
And then you can go down the line. I guess we're going to cover Tag Team? Well, that's 93, right?
93 was Tag Team. Right. But yeah, but these guys were a part of, this crew. It was 95 Sal. It was 69 Boys. And there was the girl group This and That.
Right.
Right?
Right, right.
And then they were all produced by CC Lemonhead and Jay Ski, who would be called the Quad City DJs.
Hey, all right.
There we go.
There you go.
But did you...
I didn't know his name was CC Lemonhead. That's
CC Lemonhead.
Remember we did that one show in 93 where we called out all these weird names? Okay, yeah.
So it was released. This was probably the biggest song in our top 10 that was released on an independent label.
Right.
How's this label? Rip It Records.
Yes.
Rip It Records. Rip It.
I mean, that ain't gonna fly in 2020, but yeah.
This song would go platinum. It spent 4 months in the Billboard Pop Charts top 20. 4 months.
I believe that.
And they're from Jacksonville, Florida.
Yep, there you go.
Jacksonville, Florida.
Major hit.
Yeah.
Florida. They love it over there.
Yep, they would follow it up with, you remember the follow-up single to this?
Oh, shoot.
It has to do with an animal that's in this house.
Oh, was it the kitty? Kitty. Oh, God. I remember seeing that on the box.
All right, back to the
Let's not play that.
The debut song from Craig Mack, a.k.a. Craig Mack.
Okay. So, of course, everybody knows this is a hit. Okay, we got it. It was strange that this song hit, though, with Dre being so strong and West Coast sound being so strong, because this kind of takes it back to the raw 93 time.
Right. But I think that this beat is one of the most hypnotizing,
That's
hypnotic beats of the 90s.
Exactly.
And it was undeniable. The beat was undeniable.
And once again, this is Puff Daddy.
This is Easy Mo B, right? And Puff Daddy.
This is the marketing
of
Puff Daddy.
Just the genius of it all.
And he put this out, and then along with Juicy, to offset, and it worked.
Right.
It worked. I mean, this song wasn't a major, major, like The Chronic or something, but
it was
good.
Platinum. I mean, it went platinum.
Right, but it, as far as we talk about like Hawaii, it was a select few
East Coast,
people.
This was
East Coast is
the
major because this was like they were happy to have East Coast back.
Right. I mean, let's we're gonna go into it all, but we'll talk about the remix too, but.
Now this was the one that hit in Hawaii. People like this
remix,
one for some reason.
But,
because it had all the people.
Just backstory real quick on the song, you know, it was the debut single of Bronx born rapper Craig Mack, right? First official Bad Boy single from the label.
Right.
Although Notorious B.I.G. would have a feeling about a way about it, and then Puffy would actually shelve Craig Mack's album and release Ready to Die before Craig Mack Project Funk the World was released.
Correct.
So that was kind of a shot to Craig Mack there, showing him you're not as important to me as Biggie.
That was the beginning of the end.
You know, he released it a week later,
right.
But the album was recorded like way before.
Right.
But he made him just hold that album, and he goes like, "Oh, right. We're gonna release you guys same time."
Well, the video is iconic as well, because we gotta remember the people. There was never a posse song like this before that kind of blew us away.
This
because you had everybody of the time that was
this
that was
reinvented hot. The posse remix.
Right. It was a black and white. And then you had Biggie in there. That was like, wow. And then you'd have like Das FX hanging out. You had Wu-Tang in there. You had Digable Plants in there. LL Cool J's rapping again.
Directed by celebrity director Hype Williams,
right? And the LL Cool J part was pretty iconic because that was kind of his return because he was on the downward end. And then you had Rampage coming on there. We did not know yet.
He was the one rapper where he was kind of like, why is this guy on?
Right. We just didn't know. And then you had Busta Rhymes in there, which was like, we weren't used to Busta Rhymes being a solo guy. And here he comes. And it was just a lot of stuff going on. And it was iconic.
And this was the first appearance of Busta Rhymes after leaving L.O.N.S.
Right.
After leaving Leaves and
So you had a lot of elements in this song and video that was very played a lot.
I just feel honestly that even though Craig Mack is considered by a lot of hip hop people to be a one hit wonder guy, like I feel people really need to put a little bit more respect on his name. To me personally, he's a better rhymer than people remember him to be. He has more clever puns and metaphors than people remember it to be.
He didn't have the backing.
Right. But, you know, he was originally called, thank God he changed his name. His original name was MC EZ.
Yes.
And he was actually a roadie for EPMD.
That is correct.
And basically, because of his connection with EPMD, he got the Sean Combs, the Puffy audition.
Yep.
And he was the first artist to sign before to Bad Boy.
Correct.
Before Biggie. So I can see how Craig Mack would feel slighted and feel a way about Puffy then putting all his resources in Notorious B.I.G. and just forgetting about him.
Right.
And leaving him in the dust.
Right. Exactly.
And a lot of people don't realize that this song, this beat that Easy Mo B gave him, was originally for the artist Apache.
Ah. Gangsta Bitch.
Gangsta Bitch.
Yes.
Apache. And Apache couldn't record because he was on tour with Naughty by Nature. So Easy Mo B gave it to Craig Mack. What a robbery for Apache there.
What a piss off.
But I would not want to hear Apache on this beat.
It would not work because he'd be too loud and for people that remember.
Okay,
Apache.
So here's the hot take. For the Posse Cut, who has the best verse of the remix? For you, personally. Bars, straight bars.
Well, because Biggie's on this thing, and we were all excited just to hear anything from him. The excitement factor was him. The great to hear him again sounding okay was LL. Busta Rhymes was the one that was like, well,
this guy's here and he's got a.
He's ready to go.
And he's ready to go.
Right? Yep. Get ready. So
he was the star. He was the star moment.
Oh, clearly. And this was a perfect setup for him. So he's the one. He would be the one.
This was the song that got him the deal with Elektra, I think, to then make, you know, Woo Ha.
Right.
And, you know, everything.
All that. Right.
And then they would have another hit with Get Down with Easy Mo B and Craig Mack would be the other single.
And there was a remix with Q-Tip.
And then the remix with Q-Tip, right. So that was number five. There was
four
other songs bigger than this.
Bigger than that? Oh, boy.
And it was a debut from a Chicago rapper called The Brat.
What's the theme of this episode? Gangster, clean music.
Yep.
Jermaine Dupri is not stupid, too.
Nope.
And he took a woman, made her sound like Snoop Dogg.
He was Puff Daddy before Puff Daddy. Let's be real. I mean, he was sampling other people's sounds.
He copies everything.
And
everything. He's the Bad Boy clone. Everything Bad Boy did, he did a version.
Well, I would say Puffy copied what he was doing,
But then he got it bigger, Dupri did the same. If 112 came out, he gonna make a Jagged Edge come out.
Right.
The Snoop come out, The Brat come out. I mean, it was clearly.
Yeah, you nailed it. The Brat was, and he said it in interviews, this was the female equivalent to Snoop Dogg.
Yeah, we all saw it. I mean, we were younger then, we still saw it.
Right.
And see, this song, I like Give It To Me better than this one.
Oh, for the singles.
For the singles.
Yeah, because it just had a little bit more up-tempo. It had that bop to it.
And it had that horn. You know, this one is just like the straight up, it's like a Warren G song.
But hey, again, for a female rapper, she had skills.
She held her own.
She had a good flow.
Yeah, she held her own. And she has had a long-lasting career.
Right.
And she pivoted in an interesting way later on in her years where she went more sexy.
Right.
When you had to. But then for her to do it, and she dropped a lot of weight to do it, and she had to do what she had to do.
LeBrat, a.k.a. Shantae Harris, you know, this was her only single to go platinum. Give It To You never went platinum. Was it minor hit, right? But then the story was she got discovered at a Yo MTV Raps talent contest. And the winner got to meet Criss Cross. And then she asked Criss Cross if she could audition for Dupri.
Yeah.
Dupri signed her, and then she was first appeared on The Bomb, the song from Criss Cross. That was
correct.
Her first appearance.
Yes.
Right.
That was the second Criss Cross album.
Right. And then Jermaine took her image because she was kind of that roughneck chick,
right,
but then switched it to the gangsta chick. And
smart.
And then it was so funny. Remember when she did the career rebrand was the sexy image brat.
Yep.
That's when she was dating Allen Iverson.
That's right.
Yes, she was dating AI.
Right. And then she starred in Glitter.
And was buddies up with Mariah Carey. Yeah. And now in 2020, she came out as a lesbian.
Oh.
So congrats, LeBrat.
Damn it. You're like going to bang Tyrese in a video. Like,
oh. Yeah, that's right. What do you like?
What do you like?
What do you like? All right. So this is a song that, this is probably the one song that I can live without on this whole thing is, but we can't deny it. It's number 3 for the biggest singles. It's What a Man.
Oh.
Salt and Pepper and En Vogue.
Yes. Forgot this was 94 as well.
Yeah, released in December of 93, but then will go on to be one of the most played songs of 94, multi-platinum. What's your thoughts on this one, man?
I don't like it. Never liked it.
Yeah, we're not going to play much of this song, but, you know, just, it was one of those songs that just got played at everybody's party. It got played at Oceans, it got played at Blue Zebra, all the ladies' nights. You couldn't go to a ladies' night without hearing this song. Oof. I get it. It's a female empowerment song. More power to the ladies. And if you still love this song from nostalgia, great on you. But I am
good for you.
I'm not. I'm over this one. This one, I'm done. We can move on. But that was number 3. Number 2 for the biggest song crossover hits. And I'm going on this chart, guys. So just know how I'm actually putting these in order. These are all based on the amount of records actually sold. The highest it's charted, so it's an average of records sold and the highest it charted on the pop charts. And this was a song that hit top 10 pop charts. Number 1 rap single.
I forgot about Coolio.
It's Fantastic Voyage from Coolio.
Now, I enjoyed this song when it first came out. I was a fan of this song. It was
great
fine.
Great sample. And no one had sampled Lakeside, song Lakeside. The great group Lakeside.
And then he had an aura to him because he was part of WC and the Mad Circle. And
he
was rapping on with them. And then he had County Line. County Line was awesome.
That's my favorite of his debut singles.
So I was surprised that this got blown up as it did, but not surprised. Because it's a very catchy song.
Yeah.
Very catchy video.
Yeah.
And
produced by Dobbs the Wino. And he was kind of he was the fun hood answer. He's gangster, but he's kind of a comedian.
Right.
The video is very entertaining.
Right.
You know, the video was directed by F. Gary Gray, who would go on
that
to
is correct,
Friday
yes.
and set it off and straight out of Compton.
It had all the vibes of that, yes.
Yeah, Coolio.
Major hit.
He just became too commercialized. And by the time Gangster's Paradise came out, it was just everywhere. And now he's starting, you know, he kind of was feeling the backlash.
Was Gangster's Paradise in 94?
No, that was 95? Like 95 when Dangerous Minds came out, yeah. So
that was my all-time worst song of all time.
Oof.
That is so brutal.
That song is rough.
I can only listen to a second.
How many karaoke versions have I had to listen to with white people rapping that in a bar?
I just want to know, why do people like that song so much? Can we survey like?
Yeah, I'm
people?
Curious too. I'd be curious
why?
To find out.
And they sing
I never got the appeal.
Never. Power and the money. Money and the power. Minute after minute. Hour after hour.
That's right.
I know this because it's horrid and everybody knows sings this. It's awful. This is the number one song you said?
No, this is number two.
Oh, wow.
And then the number one song, right, the biggest song of 1994.
Vanilla Ice. Oh, of course.
Everybody loves it. It's right. Regulate from Warren G.
Yeah, I guess that's number one, right? That makes sense. It makes sense to be number one.
Now, overall, from singles sold, this is our only like multi platinum. This
right.
would go like 2-3 times platinum. And this was the song that saved Def Jam. Def Jam was
that is
in
correct.
Financial distress.
Yes.
The smartest thing Lior Cohen and Russell Simmons did was sign Warren G. And the biggest mistake that Death Row did was not signing him. And
which is strange because they're related.
Right, related but it was something about, even Warren G talked about it, that he felt that right. Suge had something against him. Suge didn't like him.
Right, that was the backstory.
And yes. Suge always looked at him as a
right.
Dr. Dre hanger-on.
Right.
And
well,
Warren G, actually, if it wasn't for Warren G, we wouldn't have the sound of the Chronic.
Exactly.
He was the guy who found all those samples.
Exactly.
He helped Dre in the studio.
Right.
You know, he brought in Snoop. He brought right. in Warren, Nate Dogg. He
right.
brought in Daz. I mean, come on. Warren G is, come on.
Warren G is the MVP of this episode.
Yeah.
Because the sound is all themed to this man right playing right now.
Right.
This is the clean sound of that sums up 1994. That's why
now
they
you
hit.
Now, think about this sample, right? This is Michael McDonald's, I keep forgetting.
That was correct.
Think about this sample now in 2020, guys. If he was to sample Michael McDonald right now, Michael McDonald would take 99% of the royalties.
Yeah.
And yeah. back then, sampling was still new.
Right.
They were able to kind of renegotiate and negotiate these terms based on how big the hit was they were sampling.
Right.
And that's right. kind of reason why De La Soul, a lot of De La Soul stuff can't be released now because they never cleared the samples.
Well, Biz Markie got dinged.
Biz Markie got, you know, huge lawsuits, you know, but what they did was genius is that Def Jam went to Michael McDonald. Michael McDonald got 50% of the royalties of the song.
Yeah.
And then Warren G and Nate Dogg split it 25-25.
There you go.
And this
that's the hustle.
Became the biggest rap single of 1994.
This was played everywhere.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
And off the Above the Rim soundtrack. So I had to sting even more for Suge Knight.
Right.
That the biggest song off the Death Row soundtrack was not a Death Row artist.
He was thinking of killing someone.
Man.
Yeah. Throwing somebody off the balcony. That was when Vanilla Ice got thrown off the balcony. 94? Was that 94 or 93?
Probably around that time.
Right. So
it must be. I think this it was before that. But.
Well, I would think so. But this is that sums up this theme. Is that it? That's the number one song, right?
That's the number
that's
one
the
song.
Theme of
but
this
I got
show.
One more quick thing that we'll go over real quick, but it'll be fast.
What?
But no. But any last thoughts on the top 10 of those songs that we played?
I agreed with all.
No. But what were the songs that you actually can still listen to? Can you listen to any of those songs in 2020?
In 2020, in the car.
Born to Roll.
Born to Roll. Yes.
All right. Players Ball.
Yeah.
Players Club.
Questionable. Maybe.
All right.
Fantastic Voyage, no. What a Man, back then, no. Not now, either. And
Flavin' Year. Remix, maybe.
I would actually, this is the original, more so than the remix.
Oh,
yeah.
Nice.
Juicy, I wouldn't. What else we do? 69 Boys. Any guy listening to Booty by yourself in a car.
That's more of a novelty song,
Re-question
though,
your
right?
life.
Like,
right.
That song is it's fun for nostalgia.
Well, but what guy do you know is listening to Booty in the car by himself driving around, or even with people in the car? Or
wouldn't
allowed
that be
to have
incredible?
People in the car?
Like if your Uber driver picked you up and
he's
blasting
like
Tootsie
Roll.
Like,
what do you tell him at that point? You know, I hope that never comes to be with any of you out there that you have to tell the Uber driver to turn down 69.
Right. But well, Juicy, you still play Juicy?
No, I wouldn't play Juicy.
No, okay. Thuggish Ruggish Bone.
Oof. I would listen to that in the car.
Okay.
Yeah. Juicy, I would probably play out if it was like your dinner.
Yeah.
Like one of those things.
I think
something
for
with Sean
me, you know, I still play World Is Yours because I'm a Nas fan. Your dog is too, obviously.
Really?
Don't
be.
I still play I Seen a Man Die by Scarface. I'm a big Scarface fan. I still
I
like
guess
Born
so,
to Roll.
Yeah. If you're going to play stuff in the car, it should be like something slower. No one's playing fast stuff in the car unless you're like, you know,
you're
Night at the Roxbury,
up.
Or
you're drinking like 10 Monsters.
Right, are you Hype Williams? Or, I mean,
Well, just rounding out the episode, I kind of wanted to, you know, this is going to lead up to our album breakdown, but I'll probably like give more of a should we do Source Awards on the next episode? Should we save Source Awards to the next episode? Source Awards 94?
For the next episode?
Yeah. Should we save it?
Please.
Okay. I know you had enough. I can see by the look on your face, the vein in your forehead, you know, that that disassociated look. That Calgon take me away look.
Yeah, sum that all up. Close this out before you make some other kind of things. So, yeah.
But for you guys that are in there, hopefully you guys got something out of this, whether it be nostalgia or maybe a little fun fact that you didn't know about one of these songs. But we just appreciate you guys still listening to us, and hopefully you'll continue listening to the Year in Hip Hop 1994 for Sleep Time's Over. And to you, sir, thank you for having me. We are social distance, guys. We are sitting apart. We are... Don't worry, people. Don't call the HVD on us. Aaron's mic is already... The battery's dead, so he's all done. So I'm going to sign out for him. I'm going to say, get out of here. That's from Aaron Sakai. All right. Peace. Sleep Time's Over. We'll see you next time.